Well, good to see you all. Good morning. Let's do this. Go back one slide to Ben was talking about slow church. So if you've been here for a while, I was trying to figure out how long awakening's been going on for, and I guess it depends on what phase of awakening you talk about. I guess technically our first meeting was over 10 years ago, which is crazy. Probably the only person that was at that one was Ben. When it was back in the apartment, I was still single and no kids before you were even there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. oh, no. I'm talking the other apartment. Uh-huh. There's been a couple apartments. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey. Nicole was there early on in the apartment as well, like the first apartment, pre-Joe apartment. So one of the things that we're doing, we've talked about this over the past couple of weeks, is how we're in this transition period as a church, kind of rebuilding a little bit, refocusing. And one of the things I thought we could do as we jump into this season is revisit a book that was highly influential for me as I was trying to figure out what did I want Awaken to look like. And I remember finding this book, reading it, and was like, oh my goodness, like this totally encapsulates so many of the philosophies and principles that Awaken is founded upon. So I want to go through this book throughout the summer. So maybe some of you have the book. I know I talked to some of you, you have it, great, pull it out, get the cobwebs off of it. If you haven't gone through this book, I encourage you, pick up a copy. They're on the back table. You can start looking through it as much as you want. Beginning on September the 12th, we're kind of going to go chapter by chapter through the book because there are these really big ideas within each chapter. I think there's like 8 or 9 different ideas, and I want to talk about those ideas, but I don't want to talk about them from some 50,000 foot view of it. Rather, I want to talk about what does it mean for us here at Awaken. So we're going to read the book, but we're going to look at it specifically through the lens of, well, what does it mean for us here in Westchester County at Awaken Westchester Church as we are in this time of rebuilding and rethinking some things. So pick up a book on the back table. I can order more if we need them. And September 12th, in a couple of weeks, we will start our journey through Slow Church. Now, today, we are actually going to be concluding another journey. And we can go to the next slide. This is our image of Noah and the flood. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about this story. We've been comparing it to some of the other ancient flood accounts, and we've been finding that this story that we find in the book of Genesis, it is a progressive story that at the time in the world, it painted a radical, revolutionary new view of who God was, our relationship with God, and how God viewed us as humans. So today I want to end this series. This would be week 5 of the Noah series. And let's talk about the end of the story. So if you have your Bibles, go to the next slide. We can flip to Genesis, I believe, actually go another slide or two so I can see where we are. Genesis 9, one more. Yeah, Genesis 9, verse 18. We'll go back to the beginning. So this is after the flood, and here we are, the sons of Noah, who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now Ham was the father of Canaan. These were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over the whole earth. Noah, man of the soil, he was a gardener, he had a green thumb, proceeded to plant a vineyard. When he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered inside his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father naked and told his two brothers outside. Keep going. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their shoulders. Then they walked in backward and covered their father's naked body. Their faces were turned the other way so they would not see their father naked. In the ancient world, seeing another person naked would bring shame upon you. So when Noah awoke from his wine and he found out, I love that line, right? When Noah awoke from his wine, you ever have a moment like that? When you awoke from your wine, and he found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan, the lowest of slaves will he be to his brothers." And he also said, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Shem. May Canaan be the slave of Shem. May God extend Japheth's territory. May Japheth live in the tents of Shem, and may Canaan be the slave of Japheth." All right, two really important things to note here. Let's go to the next slide. First, the main focus on this story is on Canaan. Now, notice this. Let's go back to the beginning. We go three slides. I'm giving Laura a workout here because she's in training, so I got to make sure she's keeping up here. Let's all, like, she's doing a good job, right? Yes. We're all tracking with you. So see, we told you, you can't get it wrong. Notice here, right from the start, there's three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. But then we have some parentheses to tell us that Ham was the father of Canaan, and then from this point forward, Ham is gone. And now the focus is simply on Canaan, who Canaan is the son of Ham. Now, keep going back to that other slide, because this is really important that we catch what's going on. If you miss that detail, you're going to miss everything that's going on here, because this is brilliant storytelling. So Ham disappears. Now, if you know anything about the Old Testament, who are some of the major villains in the Old Testament? The Canaanites. You're right, too. Sin is the main villain in the Old Testament. So are the Canaanites. Because the Canaanites are people of depravity. They're people who live in the promised land, but they're not deserving of the promised land. So the Israelites come in, they remove the Canaanites out of the land because they're wicked, they're filled with sin, they're evil, they're not deserving of that which they've been given. What's happening here in the very beginning of Genesis is we're being given an explanation as to why the Canaanites aren't deserving of the land. If there's an enemy, there has to be a reason why they're the enemy, right? Just turn on the local news. Depending on where you source your news from, someone happens to be the enemy, and there's all these reasons why a certain group or certain person is an enemy. Well, right in the beginning of Genesis, we're given the rationale as to why the Canaanites are the enemy and why they're not deserving of living in the promised land. This is very, very important for understanding the entire Old Testament. Notice Noah's blessing. We don't have to go back to it. He blesses two of his sons. The Israelites come through the other sons, but he curses the other son. Imagine if you're that third son and you're hearing this curse your father is bestowing upon you, and yet your other two brothers, they're being blessed and praised, and Noah's asking that God would increase their boundaries, would increase that which they've been given. I mean, this would be extremely insulting, dehumanizing for Ham, and then for the Canaanites. Now, another point. Go to the next slide. Okay, this is another extremely, extremely important thing to note here. The blessings and the curses, they come from Noah's mouth. These are not divine pronouncements. This is crucial. Sometimes we read through the Bible and we think, well, everything is in the Bible must come from God, but there's some really crazy, weird, not so good things in the Bible, right? Can we all agree with this? We all check and we're all on the same page? And whenever we read the Bible, we have to be really careful to see, well, what comes from God, what is of God, and what actually comes from humans? Because sometimes we can misconstrue things in certain ways, and we can take things that humans have done or said, and we can then just place them on God. Well, because, well, it's in the Bible, so it must be what God wanted, what God desired. Do you think God really wanted to bestow a curse upon one of the sons? Is that what we know to be true about God? That God blesses some and curses others? Or is God a God of blessing for all people? Does God want to see all people flourish and prosper? See, it's really important when we read this story. Why are the Canaanites like that? Well, Noah pronounced a curse over them, but the curse wasn't a God-given curse. And in the ancient world, and I think this is true for us in the world today, blessings and curses, they have the power to shape your destiny. Someone speaks some words over you, you're going to live into the words, especially if it's someone that you look up to, a parental figure, a coach, a teacher, a family member, maybe a grandparent. Someone says something about you, you stand up a little taller, your shoulders go back a bit, you're like, yeah, that is true about me. But someone says something that is insulting, something that drags you down, your shoulders slump a bit more. Oh, you know, is that really what they think about me? Is that how others view me? Is that how God views me? Is this what's really true about me? If we go to, oh, I love my notes here. Go back a slide. Look, I'll show you this. Funny. So I have noted here, tell the story. I still haven't come up with a story. Okay, I'll tell you a story. Because it's important. Like, how do we bring this into the modern world, right? Because blessings, curses, part of the ancient world. So I told you I didn't want to use the same story that I used like 7 years ago when I gave this sermon, but I'll use the same one because it's an interesting story. So when I was working on this sermon, like the first iteration of the story a couple of years back, I was sitting at a table. I used to do more of my work out of my office at coffee shops. And I must have been probably down in Cape May because I was near a bed and breakfast. And there's not too many of those in Westchester, I don't think. And I overheard that there were two women, and they were talking about the bed and breakfast that they were staying at. And the one woman said, you know, I love just staying at bed and breakfasts because, or at least this particular one where we're staying, because in the morning when I woke up, I came down from my room, I went to the table where breakfast was being served, and the host of the bed and breakfast was just the nicest lady ever. She made this giant breakfast, and then she sat down with us and talked with us, told us about the town where we're staying, and she was just the most loving, carefree, energetic spirit. It's like the joy just came out of her pores and just came all over these two women as they were talking. You could just tell. And the woman was telling them about how lovely these visitors were, how much she loved that they were staying with her. And what the women were talking about was how that directed the rest of their day, where they were having this conversation with her, and they were hearing how lovely they were, and they had this breakfast, and they said for the rest of the day, they were just filled with love and joy. Isn't that what happens? You're having a conversation with someone. Someone is encouraging you. Someone is paying a compliment to you, and the rest of your day, it's like nothing, you can spill your coffee on yourself, and like, it's like, whatever. I had that conversation in the morning. Everything is great. But imagine if things were twisted around, and you had a conversation in the morning where someone was telling you, like, you get into work in the morning, and immediately before you get there, your boss is just nitpicking some of the work that you did yesterday and ripping it apart and not doing it in a really nice way. Or you're having a conversation with someone who lives in your house, and they're just ripping you apart. There's no grace. There's no love in the conversation or the critique. You're going to carry that with you the rest of your day. Now you're going through traffic, and now you're the one who's honking your horn at everyone else. These conversations, the words that we speak to others, they matter deeply. They shape the people that we become. They shape how we see what's happening from day to day. Now let's go to the next slide. I put it this way, words of blessing have a way of speaking to our soul and giving us the confidence to live into the words being spoken about us. It's true, right? Yeah, those words, they just sit there and they give us that, you know what? I am a person of generosity. I am a person who has talent in this particular field. I am a person who has a lot to offer. I am someone who is great in every way. Whatever it might be, they just have this way of sitting there. But then when someone says the other, those curses, the negativity, they also have a way of just rotting us from the inside out. Let's go forward. Yeah, so when those words of affirmation aren't spoken over us, it leaves a hole in our soul. So I have here daddy issues. And how many movies have you seen or TV shows where the main character is trying to navigate through the relationship with their father? Because there's been certain harm that's been done, words of blessing, of affirmation that weren't given. And we all need words of affirmation and love from our father, from our mother. When it's not there, it leaves a hole. I mean, how much of life, how much of our time in life is spent searching for affirmation that wasn't given? It happens in small ways and in large ways. But so much of life, and we see this played out in story after story, Hollywood story after Hollywood story, people are searching for the affirmation that they were never given. And when it's not there, it causes us to search for it in ways that aren't the healthiest and best for our souls. One author calls it a father hunger. Think about Ham. He had this father hunger. His father didn't give a blessing to him. His other brothers received a blessing. There was this hunger, something that he knew his brothers have, but he himself didn't receive. And so what did he do? He passed that father hunger. He passed that wound down to his son, who then passed it down to his son, and then the next and the next. Very rarely do those wounds stay with us. If we don't heal them, if we don't do what we can to bring healing to the wounds and the holes that we carry within us, then we typically will pass them on to our kids. They'll show up in the next generation, and then the next, and the next. See, I asked the question, how would the story look differently if Noah had actually forgiven? You know, what you did was wrong. Let's have a conversation about it. Okay, let's talk about this. It was wrong. There's no denying that. But I forgive you. And instead of sending you on a road of perpetual curse, a perpetual cursing, and then having the next generation having to live under that curse, I want to forgive. Imagine how the story would change. Imagine how the Canaanites might look differently if they were living under a blessing instead of under a curse. So let's go to the New Testament, and let's talk about Jesus. So this is Matthew, one slide forward, Matthew chapter 15, verse 21. And this is how widespread the curse got. So here we are, Matthew 15. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman, here we are, back at the Canaanites, all the way, a couple thousand years later in the story, a Canaanite woman from the vicinity came to him crying out, Lord. Notice this, I just find this so fascinating. The book of Matthew is written to a Jewish audience. The Jewish people still are seeing the Canaanites as enemies, as people not deserving of blessing. I mean, think about when you look around the world. I guarantee you, we all do this. We all have a prejudice towards certain people, towards certain groups of people. I don't care who you are. I'm the same way. There's certain people who we begin to question, is God's blessing really for them as well? I mean, this is how deep-seated this was in the Jewish consciousness. The fact that thousands of years later, and Matthew writing after Jesus, right? The gospel came after Jesus walked the earth, and still, it's a Canaanite woman. So there's certain emotion already buried into this text when you read this, if you're the original audience, a Canaanite woman. I can't believe she would approach Jesus. Where does she have the nerve to talk to Jesus? He's a good Jewish man. Why would a Canaanite woman be talking to Jesus? And she said, Lord, son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly. Well, Jesus didn't answer a word. It's interesting, right? She approaches Jesus. He says nothing. It's like he's ignoring her. It's kind of weird for Jesus, is it not? And so his disciples came to him and they said, come on, Jesus, send her away. She keeps crying out after us. Do you not know who this woman is? She's not one of us. She's one of them. Send her away, please. Stop the shouting and the crying. And so he said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Wait, hold on. This is Jesus? I'm not. And so the woman came and then she knelt before him and she said, Lord, help me. And he replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. This is awful. This is terrible. Jesus is playing into the stereotype, into the prejudice. He's affirming it. And then she says, yes, it is, Lord. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. And then Jesus said to her, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And her daughter was healed at that moment. This is such an interesting, fascinating story. Go to the next slide. We already talked about Matthew's writing to a Jewish audience. The audience are descendants of Abraham. So they're descendants of Shem, who they received the blessing. What Jesus is doing here, he's exposing the deeply held prejudices. You're a scavenger. Remember, what did the disciples want Jesus to do? To send her away. Don't let her. She's one of them. She's not one of us. what Jesus is doing here in this conversation, it's like he's affirming it and he's exposing how wrong it is. So the disciples in the beginning here, when they hear how Jesus not answering and then calling her a scavenger, like, yeah, Jesus is right. Get her out of here. But then Jesus flips the script. The disciples, they would have been all smug, yeah. And then when he says, your daughter is healed. wait, no, it's not supposed to be that way. It's one of them. You don't heal the other team. They're out of the circle of blessing. You don't do this for them. Jesus is healing a 2,000, 3,000-year-old curse. A curse that had been passed down that was still held by the Jewish audience. Jesus is now healing it and saying, everything that you believed, it's wrong. Remember, I'm only for the lost sheep of Israel, and then Jesus expands the sphere of blessing. It's no more us versus them. It's just simply us. Us. I think I have three questions for us. Three questions this story raises. First question, can we be blinded by seeing ourselves as blessed? Are we blinded to the plight of others? When we look at our lives and we think that we're blessed, that we're blessed by God, we're part of the in crowd, we're part of the in people, it's us. By holding that mentality and seeing other people as a them or as someone outside of God's blessing, are we blinded to the pain of others? Can we be blinded to the plight of others? It creates a sense of entitlement. I'll go back one more slide. I love this last phrase. I heard this many, many years ago, and I absolutely love this. Words create worlds. The words that we speak create the worlds that we live in. The words that we speak over others creates the worlds that other people live in. You speak words of blessing, man, that's going to be a world that looks vastly different than if you're denying the humanity of someone else. And then a second question. This is the question for us to think about this week. How can we be mindful of the words that we speak? What if every single conversation, what if every single word we spoke this week, what if we viewed it as a blessing or a curse? And I'm talking even when you're at Stop and Shop and you're talking to the checkout person, the cashier. What if a simple, hey, how are you doing? And then actually listening. You know, it breaks my heart every time that I see someone online on their phone while the person is checking out their groceries. It's dehumanizing. It's almost like saying, you're doing this for me. You're less than me, and I'm on my phone because I have important business. I have important things. What if we actually thought about every single conversation, every interaction that we had with someone else was a chance to bless someone forward? Because, let's face it, there's enough curses going around these days. There's enough shaming going around. There's enough heaviness that we're all carrying around with us. What if we were people who broke the curses? And like Jesus, we were people of healing. And we created a different world for people to inhabit. A world of love, of dignity for every person to live in. So this week, how can we be mindful of all the words that we speak, of every interaction being a chance to bless others? And then a third, final question for us. And this is a personal question. Have there been any curses spoken over you that have shaped your life in destructive ways? Has anyone ever spoken words over you that have robbed you of your humanity, of the value, the immense worth that God sees in you, the worth that you were born with, that you carry with you? Has anyone denied that value? Are there any curses spoken over you that need to be broken this morning? Maybe it was a parent. Maybe it was there were words of affirmation that a brother, a sister, a friend, you saw them receive words of affirmation and blessing from a father, from a parent, and you've longed for those words to be spoken over you. We'll do this. I'm gonna ask Lois, our new kids director, and me and Lois will be up in front here. I can volunteer, Lois. It's okay. We have a good relationship. And if anyone wants to be prayed over this morning, we would love to pray for you. If anyone has had any curses or any words, or you feel like there's a hole, there's something missing, and you would desire prayer to break that curse, to bring healing to any of those wounds, we would love to pray for you this morning. So as we play this last song, just simply come forward, and we would love to offer prayer for you this morning. Let me pray for us. God, I thank you that you are a God of blessing for all people. I thank you that you are a God who desires to see every single person live into the fullness of who they were created to be. And words have this power. Sometimes we don't realize the power of words, but they have this power to shape the type of people that we become in life. So first, God, I ask that we would be people of blessing, that we would be people who are mindful of the words that we speak, and that in every interaction, we would see an opportunity to bless people, to remind them of their value, their worth, the love that you have for them. And then, God, if there's anyone here this morning and we've been carrying around any curses, any words that have shaped us in a destructive way, God, I pray for healing over those words. If there's any words that have been missing, any blessings that have been missing in our lives, I pray that your Spirit would fill those holes, those gaps, with words of affirmation, words of healing and love and acceptance. I pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.